Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From Dartmouth Hitchcock, imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
And from Granite State College, offering diverse bachelor's and graduate business degree programs online. Designed to help working adults advance. Granite State College, where quality matters. More information and registration at granite.edu.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. As the U.S. Senate struggles with a healthcare reform bill, each state watching the debate in Washington has its own unique health profile that shapes its views. For New Hampshire, that profile includes the fact that we're an older state with large rural pockets and a state grappling with a serious opioid addiction epidemic. Those facts are clear, but there's no clear consensus on what Granite Staters want from a healthcare bill out of Washington. For example, Governor Chris Sununu said on WMUR yesterday he's not a fan of the Affordable Care Act or the new Senate measure.
Obamacare has failed horribly for the state, so we need a better solution there. But what this bill does has real dire implications for our state.
Today in The Exchange, a Granite State take on the national health reform debate, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have two guests for the hour with us in studio, Cindy Rosenwald, Democratic State Representative from Nashua. Representative Rosenwald served on the Medicaid Expansion Commission. Also with us, Senator Jeb Bradley. He's the majority leader in the Senate, a Republican from Wolfboro. Senator Bradley was one of the architects of New Hampshire's approach toward Medicaid expansion. And both of you, since this whole effort in Washington has been to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, let's just look at that for a moment. And I think to you first, Senator Bradley, what's worked and what hasn't worked from the ACA for New Hampshire? Let's look at what's worked first. Let's just break it down.
Well, good morning, Laura. Thank you. And thank you to your listeners. I mean, I think what we're seeing in Washington is symptomatic, if you will, of how essential health care is, how important a component of the overall economy it is. It represents about 1/6 of the national economy. And so whenever you touch it, it's going to have ramifications, some good, some bad. I think that some of the insurance reforms that were part of the Affordable Care Act had long been the case in New Hampshire, guaranteed issue, the ability to not have pre-existing conditions count against you. Those were, I think, long overdue on a national basis and something we had had in New Hampshire for a long time. We did take advantage of the ability to use federal funds to expand the Medicaid population because Obamacare had a hole between the traditional income threshold for Medicaid and where subsidies kicked in for people on the exchange. So that enabled us to insure over 50,000 people, many of whom have needed that coverage for healthcare needs that have gone unmet for years, for opioid abuse type of coverage, mental health coverage. Our Medicaid expansion has worked well, I think, in New Hampshire. And so we took advantage of some things in Obamacare. But like anything else, there's good and bad. We've seen rising premiums. We've seen less choices. We've seen more government control and mandates that have led, again, to those rising costs. So I think good and bad, I think we've taken advantage of, as well we should have, of opportunities to insure more people. But now there's change that's going to come, and we don't know what that change is going to be, and we're going to have to react to it.
Sure, and definitely we're going to talk about, like you said, Senator Bradley, you know, what's good, what's worked, Medicaid expansion, some of those insurance reforms, and some of the problematic areas. And then what we hope to get out of this process for New Hampshire, the process that's going on in Washington. To you, Representative Rosenwald, as well, just on the what's worked side for a moment, what do you think has been good about the ACA for the Granite State, for us here in New Hampshire, given that particular health profile, especially that I described?
Great. Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and it's really a pleasure to be here with Senator Bradley. I agree with him that the insurance market stability has been very good for New Hampshire. We're a state that most people get their insurance through work. It's a very high percentage in New Hampshire. So our individual market, those people who are buying insurance on the exchange, it's only about 6% of our population here. So there's been more stability, I believe, brought to that market since prior to the Affordable Care Act. The first year of the health benefit exchange, we had one insurer. Last year, this year, we had four. Next year, we'll have three, and one of them is probably coming back the following year in a different form.
So it's expanded choice.
I think it has expanded choice, but also brought more stability. I agree with Senator Bradley that the Medicaid expansion has been very successful here, particularly for increasing access to opioid and substance abuse treatment.
Well, Governor Sununu was on CNN just this morning, about half an hour ago, and he talked about the importance of Medicaid expansion and said the repercussions of the Senate bill as it is now, and obviously this is evolving, as it is now, would be, in his words, drastic.
You're looking at least $1.5 billion of cost to the state of New Hampshire over the next 10 years. We are a no-income tax state. We have no sales tax. We have no income tax. We really control our costs at the local level. That downshifting of costs into a state like ours, it's unfair. And more importantly, it's not practical. There's really no practical way to implement the plan as is. I have a lot of faith in the Senate to come together, revise the plan, and hopefully put something forward that treat states a little more on parity with one another and not be as financially impractical, if I can, on states like New Hampshire that are facing things like the opioid crisis, where so many folks are getting services because of some of the Medicaid opportunities afforded to them.
Again, that's Governor Sununu speaking on CNN this morning about what he hopes to get out of the Senate bill. Representative Rosenwald, $1.5 billion. That's what he says New Hampshire would take as a hit from this bill over the future decade. What's he talking about? That's a lot of money.
So the Senate bill, as it's currently shaped, does a few things that would affect New Hampshire financially in huge ways. One, starting in 2024, it reduces the federal participation rate in the Medicaid expansion from 90% to, it would be probably 50%. It's the state's traditional match. It also offers states the option of either a Medicaid block grant, which is a fixed amount with some inflation built in, or per capita caps for individuals by expansion. So that leaves states with basically three choices: raise taxes, reduce the number of people who are covered, or reduce the benefits that are covered.
So, and from what I understand about New Hampshire's Medicaid expansion, Senator Bradley, is there's a provision in there, a couple states have this, that if the feds don't come through with that promised 90%, New Hampshire just says, forget it, we're not doing this.
I mean, that's how we protected taxpayers in the state of New Hampshire, to ensure that there was accountability for the dollars that Washington promised us when the expansion took place. And I also want to say thank you to Representative Rosenwald. I think we've worked on a bipartisan basis to fashion the Medicaid expansion and a lot of other things that Cindy and I have worked on together. I think she took the lead on sponsoring legislation on prescribing to try to curb illegal use of legal prescriptions. And so we've had a, unlike Washington, we have had a bipartisan relationship here. And she gave me a shout out first, so I have to give her a shout out too. But so we did take advantage of the 90% federal match of money, even funding the, and it's actually phasing down to 90% now, even funding the 5% that we had to fund last year was somewhat difficult. Insurers and hospitals, you're going to have Steve on and on as a guest, did their share, if you will, so that we didn't have a New Hampshire taxpayer impact. How we go beyond that and pay for whatever share New Hampshire taxpayers are going to be on the hook for in the future is a very big unanswered question. I think greater flexibility from the federal government and how to manage the Medicaid populations, and something Cindy and I have talked about, instead of potentially using private insurance, which we did, have a more managed care type product with a medical home that keeps people out of emergency rooms better, make sure that people stay in their network where costs are more manageable. These are things that I think, regardless of what happens in Washington, we need to have a debate on in New Hampshire to manage those costs. And I think that, you know, we have had a history of working in a bipartisan fashion. That's going to have to continue if we're going to be successful. But I think before we do anything in terms of reauthorizing the Medicaid expansion program that we have now, we're going to have to see what the ground rules are going forward from Washington.
So that's a big, big question mark for the Granite State. What is this federal bill going to do with Medicaid expansion? Will it get rid of it? Will it fund it partially? If it funds it partially, that's going to be a big problem, it sounds like, here in New Hampshire, Senator Bradley.
Well, what I would say is, and I forgot to mention this, but roughly our Medicaid expansion has about a $500 million cost for New Hampshire on an annual basis. And at a 10% share, it's $50 million. $50 million, I mean, you know, Cindy's on the Finance Committee, and when we did the budget last year, we weren't arguing about $50 million in most cases. It was about $500,000 to $1 million at the end to put the budget together. And so these are consequential decisions. Now, that being said, 52,000 people are covered in New Hampshire, but for that coverage, our mental health crisis, our opioid crisis, and the crisis just for individual people that we all know, our friends and neighbors who don't have health insurance, would be much more significant. So a lot's at stake here. We've got to do the best we can with the resources that we have.
Well, and in that clip that we heard from Governor Sununu, he also said, you know, talked about the costs of to the state if Medicaid expansion went away. He also said, you know, look, we're a low tax, low cost state. You know, if you were from another state listening to that clip, Representative Rosenwald, Arizona or Minnesota or whatever, you could say, well, New Hampshire, you know, that's nice for you if you're a low tax state. But if you really want this Medicaid coverage to this population, pay for it yourself. Why should the feds pay for it?
Well, I think we're a low-tax state, but we're also a state where we have a relatively lower number of people who are that low income that they qualify. I wouldn't want to be Arizona or Florida or Louisiana. Those states have hundreds of thousands of people who cannot afford to purchase health insurance. So I think there are opportunities to look for how to fill in the gap between what the income qualification is for the Medicaid expansion and the point at which the subsidies kick in currently under the current law, which is there's a gap. There are, I think, more opportunities, and we can be smarter about it. And I think there's a willingness to work because it's not only the 52,000 people, it's the state budget, it's the strength of our network of doctors and hospitals that I think is at risk too. And we're a rural state.
Well, and you and Senator Bradley can get together and work in a bipartisan way. And there's certainly a history of that here in New Hampshire. But at some point, it matters what Washington decides to do. And you guys know this better than I do. And, you know, if they don't figure it out, it's going to be tough for you guys to figure it out.
Well, I think the interesting thing is, as I've watched the debate, you know, and having served in Congress in the past and understand, you know, how things get to a point before there's even a vote, the pressure on individual senators from their home state is what I think, what I hope at the end of the day is going to force compromises to be made that if there are, for instance, in Medicaid, big changes on the horizon, and look, let's face it, between Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, we have a huge $20 trillion accumulated deficit. It's not all those three entitlements, but they're a significant part. So I think in the long run, reform is necessary, but give us a glide path so that, you know, with greater flexibility, we can do some of the things that I just talked about that I think Cindy and I probably agree on, how to better manage that those costs through things that the managed care organizations have done in New Hampshire already. And I think that if we have the flexibility to do that and the sufficient resources, we can, but we need time. And so the deadlines, and I think Cindy mentioned them, of changing in the funding percentages by 2020, that's right around the corner. And that will be hard for a state like New Hampshire's. And that's why Governor Sununu, and I think we would both support what he said in his letter, has highlighted to Senator McConnell how a state like New Hampshire would be impacted by these changes.
Let's take some calls, both of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Today in the exchange, we're asking, what do people in New Hampshire hope comes out of this whole giant healthcare debate in Washington? What's the Granite State view on this, given our demographics, our public health challenges, and our politics? 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Rosenwald, Senator Bradley, let's go to Jerry in Freedom. Hi, Jerry. You're on the exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, hi. This is Jerry Kinnerk. I'm the state representative and a retired physician. And so hi to Cindy and Jeb, my colleagues. I think that the couple things to understand is that the current bills in Washington really don't do anything to address reform of the health care system. They're basically tax cuts for the wealthy paid for by taking away health insurance for the poor. And the focus on Medicaid is really misguided. I know conservatives say, well, Medicaid doubled in cost in 2008-15, but that was mostly because of expansion. If you look at the cost per enrollee, Medicaid only rose 8% in that period compared to private insurance that actually rose 33% as far as actual spending. But again, nothing in these bills addresses reform of health care. Senator Bradley actually did focus on that a moment ago in terms of differences in health care delivery. We really need to have reform that focuses on universal coverage and addresses the primary cost drivers, such as a fee-for-service system, the fragmentation of our delivery system, pharmaceuticals, and the overtesting and overtreatment that wastes about 30% of our health care dollars. And those are the kind of things that have to be dealt with to truly obtain reform and health care costs.
Well, Jerry, thank you for calling. Good to get your perspective as a former politician and a former physician. And Representative Rosenwald, he's making a broader critique that I have heard of the Affordable Care Act that kind of like the reform they had in Massachusetts, it did a pretty good job expanding access, but not such a good job at reducing costs, so that the Affordable Care Act wasn't really all that affordable.
Well, I think most of the reforms were insurance reforms. They really had to do with payment. However, there were some reforms in Medicare that I think
Medicaid. Yeah, that, for older Americans. Yeah,
mm-hmm, that are contained in there, such as penalties for early readmissions to hospitals. So really moving towards a value-based kind of payment system that I think has the potential over time to do some reforms. But I think Representative Kinnerk makes a good point that the Senate health care bill and the House version really focused on tax cuts. If I were to wave my magic wand, I would reform prescription drug costs. I would require Medicare to negotiate payment. I would scoop Medicaid in there as well. There are a lot of things that we could do to save money.
Jerry, thank you so much for that call. And coming up, we will hear from Steve Onan, the head of the New Hampshire Hospital Association, and we'll keep taking your questions and comments. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment.
I was wondering.
I'm curious to know more about.
My question is, what is a filibuster?
How does the Electoral College work?
What is required for declaring war?
A majority whip.
Congressional caucuses?
You've got questions? We've got answers. Civics 101, the shame-free podcast refresher course on how our democracy works. There is no such thing as a stupid question. So ask away and subscribe to Civics 101 on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts.
Thank you so much. Keep up the excellent work.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a Granite State take on the health reform policy debate in Washington. What aspects of this are especially important to New Hampshire? We're finding out this hour. We'd love to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With us in studio, State Representative Cindy Rosenwald, a Democrat from Nashua who served on the Medicaid Expansion Commission, and Senator Jeb Bradley, the majority leader in the Senate, a Republican from Wolfboro, and one of the architects of New Hampshire's approach toward Medicaid expansion. And Senator Bradley, I did want to give you also a chance to jump in on Jerry from Freedom, who called in, a state rep and a retired physician, talking about costs and saying how there hasn't been enough emphasis on that. I wonder what you think.
You know, I couldn't agree more with that. I think that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, didn't focus enough on costs. And I think that both the House and Senate bills, that you know, the Senate bill pending and the House bill that has passed the House, didn't focus enough on costs. And costs become a very difficult discussion for Americans because, you know, so much of healthcare depends on what we do to ourselves. Overstressed, under-exercised, overeating, smoking, drinking, you know, a lot of those personal choices that we make impact our health. And when a third party, whether it's Medicaid, Medicare, or employer-based insurance, somebody else is paying the bills. And so there's not enough cost transparency. That's something that we're not shopping enough for healthcare. The tax system should be better so that you don't have to get to 7.5% of income to be able to start to deduct. I totally agree with Dr. Kinnerk on tort issues. Too much defensive medicine is being practiced. And I think something that Cindy and I need to work on that we've discussed a little bit already today is how, especially in the Medicaid expansion, but in all medical populations, how we get people into preventative programs so that we maintain health as opposed to not having to fix situations that get out of control. And so a medical home, a primary care physician, those are things that are vitally important. I think drugs, everybody knows that drug prices are quite high. I agree with Cindy on that. Part of the problem with that is Americans are paying, because we don't have price controls on drugs, all the R&D costs for bringing new drugs onto the market. The rest of the world has price controls. Americans are subsidizing better health, if you will, through drug advances for the rest of the world.
Wait,
that's
Senator
something
Bradley,
we all should
are
be.
Are you calling for price controls on drugs?
No, I'm not. But the point is, I think Cindy and I would disagree on this. If we had price controls on drugs, we're not going to have the research into the next round of new life-saving technologies.
Well, that's the argument.
What the problem is that the rest of the world has price controls. They're not paying for any of the R&D costs, and we're on the hook for it. So, you know, President Obama, President Trump, whoever, you know, this is something that we ought to, on a bipartisan basis, be working on to better share those costs. But that's a costs are a very hard discussion. The Affordable Care Act and the successor bills are focusing more on insurance and on payment. Costs are something that we're going to have to discuss as a country, and it's going to be a pretty frank, tough love discussion.
Well, and Jerry, I appreciate you raising the issue. We have us with us now on the line, Steve Onan, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association. And Steve, thank you for taking time out with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura. Good to be with you.
So if you had your druthers, Steve, what would you absolutely make sure that any new bill out of Washington includes?
Well, you know, one of the things we've said over the last several months throughout this process is, you know, we have to look at this through the eyes of our patients and make sure that, you know, coverage, healthcare insurance coverage continues to be a very high priority. And, you know, the bill that is under consideration in the Senate now that would, you know, take away coverage for, you know, tens of millions of Americans, tens of thousands of granted staters, is just simply not something that we can support. In addition, the additional or the significant Medicaid spending reductions that Governor Sununu and Senator Bradley and Representative Rosenwald have been talking about would simply, you know, be a devastating blow to the poor women, children, elderly, and disabled who depend on the Medicaid program.
So, Steve, if you had 5 minutes with, you know, Mitch McConnell, what would you say to him? You know, Senator McConnell, please include ABC in your bill.
Well, I think we need to step back and, you know, begin to work on this in a bipartisan way. We need to focus on coverage, making sure that we're protecting the coverage gains that have been made. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about all of the taxes and other things that were part of the means of funding coverage gains under the Affordable Care Act. But one thing that we haven't talked about is the significant Medicare reductions that were part of that. And in New Hampshire, over the next decade, hospitals in New Hampshire will receive about $1.5 billion less in Medicaid reimbursement, Medicare reimbursements that were meant to pay for those coverage gains that were part of the Affordable Care Act. We simply cannot go back on coverage and continue those spending reductions in and of themselves. So we have to focus on coverage. We need to make that a priority, and it certainly hasn't been in the bills that we've seen so far.
So have you guys come out and said we don't support this Senate bill in its current form?
We have. And, you know, we've certainly been willing to try and work to find solutions that make the healthcare system better. Healthcare is transforming, and we need to find ways to continue to make sure that healthcare is accessible, it's high quality, and it's affordable. But we believe this bill just takes a step backwards and is not in the best interest of the patients and communities that we serve.
And, Steve, as you know, Representative Rosenwald and Senator Bradley are with us. And I think Senator Bradley wants to ask you a quick question.
So, Steve, I thought it would be important to talk about some of the things that the Hospital Association has brought before the legislature and why one of the successes of Medicaid expansion, and that's uncompensated care, which, I mean, let's face it, for people that don't have insurance, they end up in your emergency rooms and everybody with private insurance is paying the cost of it. And so I think it's important for the listeners to get your perspective on that important point.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for the question and for both you and Representative Rosenwald's leadership in helping to continue to move these issues along. You know, we've certainly seen a significant drop in the number of the uninsured that are showing up in emergency rooms, that are showing up as inpatients or as outpatients, you know, well over 40% reduction in the number of those uninsured patients who show up in the emergency room. And as you said earlier, you know, this is about trying to make sure people can get the right care at the right place at the right time. So let's focus on primary care prevention. Let's get that individual in to see the primary care physician. You know, when we were looking at reauthorization, we spent a lot of time talking to doctors. And, you know, the physician who said, you know, the diabetic patient who they saw either in the emergency room or as in, you know, admitted to the hospital, you know, almost monthly, because they didn't have insurance, they weren't able to access the insulin and other drugs and services that they needed to manage their condition. But because of Medicaid expansion, because of that insurance coverage, they now are able to manage their illness. And, you know, when we spoke to this physician, he hadn't seen the patient in 4 months, and that was a good thing.
Wow.
Because they were getting care in the right place, not waiting until it was a crisis and being seen in the emergency room.
So just to be real clear, sounds like, Steve, you're saying if you had Mitch McConnell's ear for 5 minutes, you would say, please, Senator McConnell, keep Medicaid expansion. I think Representative Rosenwald also wants to jump in, Steve. So go ahead, Representative Rosenwald.
Thank you. Hi, Steve. I also, what you said about Medicaid expansion and its impact on the uncompensated care, I'm worried about a particular provision in the Senate health bill, and that's if you miss 2 months of a premium payment, you have to wait 6 months to re-enroll. So I think the impact of not being able to pay for care if you lose a job and you can't make your insurance premium payments, which could be 17% of your income if you're over 50, could be catastrophic. Hospitals are not going to turn patients away. They can't and they won't. However, they're going to be stuck with the cost. And fully half of our hospitals, I think, are small enough that if their uncompensated care that they provide to sick people goes back up, I think it's going to harm them financially and perhaps catastrophically.
Well, I'm glad you raised that point, Representative Rosenwald, because Steve Onen, and we've talked a lot about the Medicaid expansion, and you know, both our guests have said it's pretty important for New Hampshire. The governor himself said that this morning on CNN. What about the private insurance side, Steve? What would you like to see kept in that arena? What would you like to see changed? Go ahead.
Well, I certainly think, you know, some of the things that have been talked about in terms of the cost-sharing reduction subsidies, those things that help those folks who are unable to afford their co-payments and deductibles and things like that, that those payments are made certain for, you know, the insurers. That's created a tremendous amount of instability and uncertainty as to whether or not those payments are going to be made. We need to make sure that those things are put in place so that the insurers and those patients, you know, can rely on those things. You know, the Affordable Care Act has been in place for a few years, and there certainly are things that I think, you know, we can do to improve that. You all have talked about a number of those things. Providing greater stability in the insurance market, I think, is certainly something that would be important, and I'm sure the insurers around the state would have a particular perspective on that, but I think that would be certainly very, very important.
Hospitals hospital associations around the country have pretty much said what you've said, Steve. You know, they want the insurance protections to continue. They like Medicaid expansion because it allows, you know, some of the benefits that you described in terms of that gentleman with diabetes. But some national business groups have said, you know, yes, let's reform this. Let's repeal Obamacare. Let's start with something better. They are concerned that the costs of this are just going to get out of control for the country, that the taxes and regulations will, you know, strangle and stifle innovation on their end. I wonder what you think about that.
Well, you know, we've certainly worked very closely with the Business and Industry Association and businesses here in New Hampshire who have supported the Medicaid expansion, the New Hampshire Health Protection Program in New Hampshire that Senator Bradley and Representative Rosenwald and others were instrumental in creating. And I think the issue and the reason, you know, they've been supportive is because, you know, they understand that when, you know, we have more and more uninsured people who show up and who need care, hospitals and others provide those services, and it ends up costing everybody more. And I think their perspective has been, let's try and find a way to make sure coverage is available so that more people have access to coverage. And I think, you know, the goal needs to be, how do we get those people in the right place at the right time to get that care so that we can keep people healthy and keep them out of the healthcare system, keep them out of the hospital, keep them out of the nursing home. We want people to be independent. We want them to live happy and productive lives. And, you know, being able to manage those conditions, preventing other conditions from becoming chronic or more severe, those are the things that we want the healthcare system to do. We talk about focusing on population health, and that's really what this is all about. And I think, you know, businesses and others certainly are concerned about the cost of healthcare. We all should be concerned about that. But I think certainly businesses that we've worked with here in New Hampshire have been supportive because they understand the importance of coverage so that others don't end up paying the cost for those who simply are unable to do so.
Well, Steve, thank you again for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Steve Onen, president of the New Hampshire Hospital Association. Lots of people want to jump into our conversation, both of you. Let's go to the phones. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. In Norwich, Vermont, Anne is on the air. Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm thinking about this topic and from the perspective of access to coverage. And if I had my druthers in one thing to ask Senator McConnell, would members of Congress be willing to enroll their families in the program that they are proposing? And the converse of that is, would they be willing to give the same access to the percentage of population that does not have coverage? It could be fully employed, yet no access to coverage. Would that percentage of the population be enabled to elect the federal employee program?
You know, I have heard someone else raise this issue. People saying, look, members of Congress get pretty good coverage. Could people who are now getting coverage on Medicaid expansion access the, you know, the coverage that Congress and their employees get? Is that just a rhetorical point, Senator Bradley, or is that a real proposal?
Well, I guess if you believe that we should have universal health care, you know, as a single payer system, that that's where you should go. And it's interesting that, you know, in this debate, a couple of people who I'm frankly a little surprised about have reached out to me and said, you know, how frightfully time consuming it is for their HR departments to be able to navigate through all the paperwork burdens that people have to navigate from. I mean, Cindy, your husband is a physician, and I'm sure has an awful lot of that navigation paperwork.
Yes.
And I'm not supporting a single-payer system by any means, because I think what P.J. O'Rourke has also said, you know, is appropriate here. Wait till you see how expensive health care is when it's free. And I think that we see with Medicaid and Medicare how expensive it can be as it's an entitlement. But the thought of how all of these regulations are creating, you know, enormous administrative burdens on healthcare providers and business owners, employers that offer health insurance is frightfully expensive.
Well, here's an email, a couple emails actually, from folks sort of on those lines that you mentioned, Senator Bradley. Brian on Facebook says, for-profit health insurance guarantees that we get minimal coverage at a bad price. Brian says, we've worked ourselves into a corner so that perhaps we will finally learn what the rest of the world has known for years. I think he's implying single payer there. And then Ray in Dalton is more direct. He says, the time has arrived for single payer. When are our politicians going to understand this? Here's another one, though, from Fred in Canterbury. He says, some people have suggested a Northern New England tri-state single payer plan. Fred says HB 250 would have had the state review health insurance options for New Hampshire, killed in the Senate for the biennium. What do you think about that, Representative Rosenwald? It tries not single payer nationally, you know, too complicated, too political. But what about a tri-state New England single payer plan?
Well, let me just say first,
is that even out there?
About 65% of health care is already paid for by the government. Medicare, Medicaid, veterans. So for people to say, I don't want government paid for healthcare to expand, they are already the biggest payer.
65%.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's partly,
I mean, it's really huge. It's not all the same program.
Sure.
But it's government paid for. So personally, I don't know anybody who is a Medicare beneficiary who basically doesn't like it. It's not like the rest of the world or Canada and England where doctors work for the government. It is paid for federally, however, and partially by the beneficiary, but also delivered by private doctors and hospitals. So I think there are a couple of different models. In terms of a regional payer, I think our challenge would be to have the required benefits be the same. Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, we don't all have the same insurance requirements. So I think first we would have to look at standardizing what those are.
Well, interesting thought, and I appreciate you throwing it into the mix, Fred. We'll take more of your emails and phone calls in just a moment. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, the question we're asking is, what do people in New Hampshire hope comes out of this whole healthcare reform discussion in Washington? So let's hear from you. More in a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a New Hampshire take on the national healthcare debate. As the U.S. Senate works on healthcare, what is the Granite State view? Given our own demographics, our own public health challenges, and our own politics, What aspects of health reform are especially important to New Hampshire? Let's get your thoughts. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. With me in studio, two longtime state lawmakers who have been heavily involved in healthcare, Senator Jeb Bradley from Wolfboro, a Republican and Senate Majority Leader. Also, Cindy Rosenwald, a Democrat from Nashua. And both of you, right back to our listeners. Kermit is in Somersworth. Hi, Kermit. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Go ahead, Kermit.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I'm a general pediatrician currently working at a federally qualified health clinic in Somersworth. 90% of the kids I see are on Medicaid. There's a couple of points I wanted to make. Prior to the ACA, Obamacare, Maryland had an interesting experiment where they had all the stakeholders involved, hospitals, IPOs, insurance companies, ancillary service providers, all got together, as well as pharmaceuticals, and basically fixed the prices across the state. So no matter where you had a procedure, whether it was an appendectomy or a total knee replacement, whether it was in Silver Spring, Bethesda, or Baltimore, it was the same price to both the insurance company and the consumer. So basically what they did was they eliminated contracting out of the equation for hospital networks, doctor groups, which is an extremely high cost for those providers.
So you wouldn't have to shop around, Kermit. It'd be the same price everywhere? Is that what happened?
That's the same price for every procedure in the CPT code book.
Wow.
As a result, what happened was they have more insurance companies competing for covered lives in Maryland than any other state. The state then monitors consumer satisfaction of those insurance companies, gives them grades, and when you go to buy your insurance, you can look at this, what grades the insurance companies get. So now the insurance companies are no longer competing on price. The hospitals aren't competing on price. The consumer is deciding whether or not which insurance company they buy based on customer satisfaction.
Really interesting. Okay.
Customer satisfaction from the hospital side, the doctor side, as well as the consumer side. So it's an interesting experiment.
Well, it is interesting, Kermit. Yeah, and I want to let our guests jump in. So thank you so much for bringing that to our conversation. Representative Rosenwald, have you heard about what they did in Maryland?
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, I think Maryland is more populated than New Hampshire. We've got these rural hospitals that are small. I think that's one way to approach it, as Dr. Kermit suggests. Another thing that we could look at is centers of excellence. So rather than having open heart surgery mushroom and take place at more hospitals, what about the idea of doing it at relatively few places that become high volume? It allows them to be really good at whatever it is they're doing and have a volume to negotiate good prices for consumers.
That's tricky, though, because if that center of excellence is up in Laconia and I need the service, that means I have to drive up to Laconia for my, you know, preoperative discussions, for my operation. I have to keep driving up there for my post-op checkups. You know what I mean? I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it does create an inconvenience for the patient.
Well, not necessarily, because if you have a surgeon who operates in Laconia but has satellite offices, so maybe once a week or once every other week they're seeing patients in Hooksett or Nashua, it becomes not so inconvenient for the patient. Plus, the patient is assured of good outcomes from a high-volume provider.
Well, it's very interesting to hear about Maryland's example, Kermit. So thank you for calling in. Here's an email from Andrew in Keene who says, given what has been discussed, why is there not more focus on fixing the issues in the ACA rather than just tearing up the law in the books and trying to start from scratch? Especially since everyone seems to agree on some things that need to stay in the bill, like no pre-existing conditions limiting access, young people remaining on folks' insurance until 26, etc. Andrew, thank you for the email. Senator Bradley, what do you think? Why are we talking about repeal and replace instead of fix?
I actually think, Laura, that much of the focus of both the House and the Senate bill is more on the payment side of things than on the insurance reforms. I mean, pre-existing conditions would be protected. The 26-year-old staying on parents' policy,
so they're keeping
same
a lot
thing.
Of that.
Yeah, a lot of the insurance reforms that I said at the beginning of the show, which I thought we've had in New Hampshire for a long time, are long overdue. One of the things that is being discussed is the age ratios for patients that would help younger patients afford health insurance, but for white-haired people like me that aren't on Medicare yet, it would probably drive up premiums. So in a state like New Hampshire, where we have a more older population, that could be problematic.
So for the 50 to 65 crowd, older but not quite old enough for Medicare,
but
that's problematic.
The one thing that the bill does is allow states to have their own age banding. And we have a more restrictive age banding that we've had for a long time that I think would protect our population. But I think I want to return a little bit to the point that the previous caller made. When Maryland did its experiment, as I recall, because legislation was introduced in New Hampshire, there were also quality issues that were coming out of that Maryland experiment. Now, there's always good news and there's bad news. We have 50 different states and 50 different insurance markets because insurance has largely been regulated by the states, not Washington. So one of the things that both the House and Senate bill tries to do is give states more flexibility to innovate. And whether it's, you know, different payment options, accountable care organizations are taking hold so that reimbursement is based on outcomes. I think that's an important point. And also to get back to the discussion about a single-payer system, I mean, I think while Medicare has worked well, and I'm about to enroll in it this year, so I hope it works well, you know, countries that have had single-payer systems have also rationed care. And that's why Canadians, you know, come to the United States for heart surgery, for cancer treatments, for things like that, because their wait times are pretty significant. So these are all the pressure points that we face. And unfortunately, with 1/6 of the economy at stake, there are no easy answers, regardless of what we do. But these are all things that have to be taken into account.
Let's take another call. This is Ray in Litchfield. Hi, Ray, you're on the air. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thanks. My wife and I, we have a bronze plan from Minuteman Health, which is, as you know, going away next year or end of the year. It's very expensive. I mean, it was the least expensive plan. It was still $900 a month. We don't receive any subsidies because the cutoff for a married couple is around $63,000-$64,000, which really isn't that much. So we don't know. I mean, next year we'll have to go with like Anthem, and they were this year around $1,300 a month, and it's, you know, with these $5,000, $5,500 deductible.
Wow, that's a lot, Ray.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're paying $900 a month, $5,500 per person deductible before co-payments kick in, and then it's $6,300 maximum out-of-pocket per person. But my point is, you know, if people talk about single-payer, And one of your guests was mentioning about how each state in northern New Hampshire, they each have our own insurance department regulating what can and cannot be sold. But if you go to a single payer, they're gone anyways. But instead of that, one of the things I saw about Minuteman was that they needed around 32,000 members to fish the break even, and they only got to like 27,000, they said, this year. So is New Hampshire too small a state to make, these individual plans affordable?
Interesting. And Ray, we'll definitely talk about that. But I'm interested in your experience because, you know, our guests have largely said, look, Medicaid expansion has helped a lot of people. But on the other side of the ledger, people like you who've had to buy insurance on these exchanges, you've had to deal with some very high costs. Ray, if you don't mind telling me why you had to buy insurance on the exchanges. You didn't get it through your work or what?
Well, we're self-employed.
Yeah.
You know, we're self-employed. So we used to have Anthem before this whole started, and it was the plan we had was just over $400 a month with a maximum $5,000 deductible. So now it's more than doubled, and the deductibles have skyrocketed. But that's why, you know, we're in, you know, we're self-employed, and that's
sure.
why we buy it on the open market. But
well,
why not have all of New England get together, have one or common requirements for insurance, you know, work it out among the governors and the state legislatures so that New England has a higher number of people who are buying this to try to reduce the cost of individual health insurance.
All right. Well, Ray, thank you very much for the call. Lots of food for thought. And we should talk, folks, a little bit more about the problems on these Obamacare exchanges that they're called. And Representative Rosenwald, you know, huge costs being paid by Ray. And from what I have read, those costs are only expected to go up. How are people going to be even able to afford this?
Well, I think particularly people who are over 50 and lower income won't be able to afford insurance in the individual market.
So is this a failure of Obamacare?
No, I think that's a failure of the proposed Senate plan, the BCRA, that the age rating can change from five times the cost for someone over 50 to five times, sorry, from three times. And maybe New Hampshire would keep its current law. I'd like to think that we would. The subsidies fall from 400% of poverty, where you're eligible for some tax credits, to 350. I think there are people who will not be able to afford insurance, but they're still going to get sick. That's really worrisome.
So this Senate bill still includes some subsidies for people to be able to afford insurance on the exchanges, but the subsidies go down. Sounds like Ray doesn't get any subsidies.
Well, that's right, because Ray is over that 400% mark. Now, there's another thing that the Affordable Care Act did that I think could be an improvement if we relooked at, which is you used to be able to buy a small group market policy, even if your business was just yourself. You could be in a small group with one employee. That is not the case anymore. If we could relook at that, I think that could be a way to save money for people like Ray.
I'd love to get your thoughts, too, Senator Bradley, on the rising costs on the Obamacare exchanges. We've heard a lot about this.
Well, I think Ray has, you know, got his finger right on the pulse of what a lot of New Hampshireites and a lot of Americans are feeling that are not on Medicare or Medicaid or Medicaid expansion. And they've seen under Obamacare dramatically rising prices, higher deductibles, higher copays. And so I think Ray is speaking for an awful lot of people that are just extraordinarily frustrated, which is why there is a move to reform Obamacare because of the rising costs and less choices.
Is that Obamacare's fault?
I think those costs are going up. Would they have gone up anyway? Yeah, no, I think that it is Obamacare's fault in large measure because, you know, the whole predicate of Obamacare was that they were going to get younger, healthier people mandated into coverage. Well, that hasn't worked as intended. And you have to, for an insurance company, you have to actuarially be able to have younger, healthier people as part of your actuarial base to pay for people with white hair like me that are starting to have health problems. And I think that one of the things that neither House bill nor Senate bill have yet tackled is some of the ways that we could lower the cost of health insurance by creating larger buying pools
for Americans.
And I think that,
it's an interesting point.
A couple of things that, you know, I mean, this is 10 years ago when I was in Congress, but I think we should consider things called associated health plans so that businesses could pool together in like-minded groups. You know, the restaurant association or something like, or the realtors or whatever, to buy big groups of health insurance to cover more individual people like that, or to allow a cross-state purchasing of health insurance. So, I mean, you know, every night on TV, you know, I watch the Red Sox games, and it's Geico, and it's Progressive, and it's State Line, or State Farm, I mean. You know, advertising for our auto insurance or other kinds of insurance. And so we ought to have a national market for health insurance. Now, I know the regulation of health insurance has been at the 50 state capitals, but let's try this as part of the reform of Obamacare. While we keep the things, you know, the federal funding for things like Medicaid expansion, which I think that part of Obamacare has worked pretty well, although we do have to be cognizant of the impact on our deficit. And so phasing in, some of these reforms, I think, does make sense, too.
Well, last question for both of you. And so now the U.S. Senate is going to try and vote again after the 4th of July. By all accounts, Representative Rosenwald, it's going to be a tough road to get something passed. The New Hampshire delegation, all Democrats, have had nothing but criticism for the U.S. House and Senate efforts. But beyond criticizing, pointing out all these people that they say are going to be hurt, what do you think the Democrats should do, Representative Rosenwald, that might lead to a solution that they like better?
Well, I think, for example, Senator Hassan was a co-sponsor of a bill that was filed by Senator Franken from Minnesota that would have worked to decrease the rising costs of prescription drugs.
So
I don't know
if
that's going anywhere, but that was a very comprehensive bill. I think Democrats and Republicans have to work together to look for and root out the causes of rising costs in the healthcare market. We can't just change insurance. We can't just reform delivery. We have to get our arms around the costs.
So we're barking up the wrong tree, basically.
Well, I think there are a lot of trees. There are three trees at least, right? Payment, delivery, cost of the services. We have got to look at cost. And I know Senator Bradley agrees with me on that.
All right. Well, we'll have you back. We'll talk about that. I want to thank both of you very much for taking time out today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.